Would you like to connect with experienced finance and accounting professionals for mentorship and career advice? Do you want to hear how the leaders in your profession got where they are now? Are you looking for a networking space, especially for the finance and accounting community? Then FEI Engage is the place for you. FEI Engage is the only community and content hub focused strictly on finance and accounting. It gives you access to the wisdom and experience of long-tenured professionals so you can make savvy decisions about your future. Visit www.financialexecutives.org/FEI-engage or click on the link in this episode's show notes to learn more.
Hi, this is Olivia Berkman, and welcome to FEI Weekly. Though there's much debate about the necessity of the CPA license, PwC's Catherine Kaminsky maintains that it's been one of the best decisions of her career. As Vice Chair and Trust Solutions Co-Leader, Catherine brings together the firm's combined audit, ESG, digital assurance, and tax reporting capabilities to help deliver sustained outcomes with clients as they seek to build trust with their stakeholders. In this episode of How I Got Here, Catherine talks about mentorship, the value of travel, and being a parent to three boys. Here's the conversation. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Olivia. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with your background. I know you grew up in Canada. So tell me about maybe a little bit about your childhood, growing up, your path to college.
Sure. Thanks. So funny enough, I did. I grew up in Ottawa, which some people know is the capital of Canada. But actually, my parents immigrated here from South Africa through the UK. So I was born in the UK and then moved to Canada, but educated completely in Canada, both high school. And then I went to university, but did a bit of a different thing where I have a history degree from university at a school called the University of Western Ontario, and then worked in Toronto for 5 years and then moved to the US.
So tell me about that. You started as a history major. How did you end up in accounting?
So it was interesting. I did do in Canada, you got 4 months off in the summer. And so people don't all know this, but Ottawa is sometimes known as Silicon Valley of the North. And so there's a lot of so I worked for 2 months in the summer at a sort of corporate job. And then for 2 months of the summer, I worked at summer camp, which was sort of the compromise. So I'd already done a little bit of corporate. And then in my fourth year early on, it was clear I wasn't going to go down a path of being a PhD in history, although I liked it. So I went to the Career Center, which I still tell students today, like, do it, use it. And I have a soon to be freshman and my nephew is a freshman. And there was a posting for arts and science students. And that's how I went in. And, you know, they brought you in the same way they bring in the accounting students. The only difference was, is for the summer, I was went back to school for doing some classes. But other than that, you're really trained. You're just still doing classes, but you're really trained on the ground at the time was Cooper's, which is now PwC. My parents always really believed some type of a professional designation, especially for a woman, in all honesty, was extraordinarily important. And that's sort of how I got there.
I'm curious, what did you enjoy most about history?
It's funny, a lot of the Americans I work with laugh and say, oh, did Canadian history, how hard could that be? But I did do Canadian history. I did European social history, which I liked. I just, you know, it gives you just a different way of thinking and analysis, you know, doing the analysis and writing. So all of those things have been extremely fundamental to my job today. Mm-hmm. I always say this to students on campus. I think they think accounting is always about debits and credits, but a lot of it is actually how you talk to people, how you listen to people, how you write from what you've heard. So all of that has come into really important to me today.
So true. So I know that you are a CPA. I know you said that Yes. Your parents said that it was very important for you to have some sort of designation like that. Tell me about the importance of that in your life, Yeah. Your career.
So I'm both a CA, the original CA from Canada. Then I redid it and became a CPA. I was one of the first, I'm now going to age myself, but I did the first new exam was my year in the CPA. So you can imagine I was the CA was a bit different. It was along the lines of it's sort of the Commonwealth version. So I did that when I was the age that most people do it. I did my CPA. Not at that. It was when I was already in as a senior manager. I think I'd already been at 8 years at the firm. And so to me, it's just a fundamental thing. And I know a lot of people do accounting and then say, I don't want to do my CPA. To me, that is the designation, is the CPA. And yes, it's more work to do it. But at the same time, it is the designation. So you can graduate with an accounting degree, but the CPA is actually the professional designation that you can never, I always say this to people, like no one can ever take it away from you. Do you know what I mean? Like you can do other things after, but you've worked so hard all the way up through to it. Why not finish it off? And my story was totally different, right? I had to pick up all these credits. Like I picked up credits in Canada because I didn't have the right ones. Then when I came here, like I'm a very fine graduate of Phoenix Online Learning. I did my tax. I did my law. For some reason, they didn't like my Canadian statistics. I don't know why. But that to me is just so important, right? Like you work so hard, you have it, and then you can make different decisions. And I don't think we talk about that as much, about the importance of the actual designation. But then I love having it because I love what I do. And I would never have gotten where I am today not having it. Do you know what I mean? So they're interlinked in a way.
I completely know what you mean. And you've been at PwC for 30 plus years, right?
Yeah,
sorry, I don't mean to age you either, but you started when you were 8, right? And so what do you love most about the firm? And then tell me about, you know, what you love about just public accounting in general.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I always say, I started right after I graduated. I graduated in May and started taking accounting classes literally that next weekend. And the firm, I think what I love about the firm and is that the evolution of your career at the firm is massive. So some people think about it like, and it's in so many different ways all the way through your career. So when you're, less tenured, it's around what clients will you serve? What industries will you serve? What will you learn? What will you do? Will I change from audit to tax or consulting? Will I do a deals? So, and then as you evolve, it's around what work will I do? What areas will I focus on? And then it goes to what country will I live in? Will I do something different? To all the way through to do I make partner? Don't I make partner? If I make partner, you start kind of all over again with an evolution of what the firm is for you then. So look, I always say it's so many jobs in one career. And I know people today like to move around a lot, but you can do it at PwC. So I think it's that. It's the evolution of client service, how we serve. It's the evolution. Like I am an audit partner at heart. I serve big audit clients. It's the evolution of how you audit, like the technology. It's just so many different changes that have happened through time that I think has made me stay for as long as I have. The love of learning. Like you're always learning, you're never really bored. So all those things you can have in one place. And I have loved it. I mean, is any place perfect for 30 years? No, right? Like, and you go through ups and downs in your career and making decisions and your life continues while you have this thing in the back. But it's actually been the most, other than honestly, my immediate family, like my parents and my brothers, it's the thing that I've had the longest relationship with in my life is PwC.
If someone were to come to you now and say, you know, I'm in college and I'm debating if I should go into accounting, if I should maybe go into finance, or like, what would you say to them?
So I'm smiling because I have the senior in high school, but I'm not allowed to talk about two things anymore. As one's being an accountant and the second one is going to a Canadian school. So that's why I'm more smiling because those are the two off topics. Look, my fundamental view on the CPA and doing accounting has never changed. It is even for finance, you still have to take an accounting class. Like no one talks about that as much. It is an incredible fundamental for anything that you do. And I will say this, during the Great Resignation or during times of like absolute need in the market, we lose the most people because people love people being trained by the big accounting firms, right? Like a lot of my clients, have all been through some type of accounting, and not just at the CFO level. I think, you know, I deal with a client right now, the CEO is a CPA, right? Like there's different, like along the line. So to me, I always say, and it goes back to this fundamental of having a professional designation, is you can always do finance, right? Once you spend 2 years, 3 years, you can do an MBA, you can go to finance. You can't just become an accountant without starting in an accounting background. So I think that's so important. That's to me. And that it is like the thing we don't talk about a lot. And look, this is for the big firms. And I don't think it's that different for the smaller firms. But in your first year, you start, you do work. Second year, and usually by the summer of your first year, you're mentoring it, whether it's the new interns, then you're, you know, teaching the second year, when you're a second year, the first year associates. And so there's a lot of leadership aspects to working at a big CPA firm and any CPA firm that you don't get the opportunity many other places, right? How many people get to go visit a client? I used to do a my client, we'd call it the question of the quarter. And my clients I signed, so it's a public PCOB client. So, you know, can you imagine you're sitting in front of the CFO of JP Morgan asking her a question of the quarter? That's amazing. So all those things is fundamentally that we can bring if you start with a CPA, right? And then there's the whole tax side that we haven't talked about, but that's the same thing. You're talking to people, you're going out to clients. And so all those things we need to talk about more than just, and look, there are parts of the job that are quite boring. Like I know that there's part of my jobs though today, and I'm pretty senior, that are still very boring. Like life is kind of like that. There's a bit of an 80-20 rule.
You did mention, you know, getting the opportunity to live in different places. Has living in different places in your career, like how has that changed your life? Is it something that you recommend to, you know, those that you mentor?
I do. Like I always say, it's always this balance you need to be careful about. You don't ever want someone to plan their life so much around the firm or their career trajectory that they make decisions in their personal life that affect it. Like I've never been a big believer in that, and people do it. And I always say never do it. But I do think as you chart your life, you should put sort of three or four objectives that you want to do as you go through your career, like a North Star. Like I always say, a 10-year plan, assuming that 10-year plan will have some ups and downs, because each way, you kind of have to do it along the way to get to that goal. And I do think international matters. I think whether it's even just a 6 months, a 3 months secondment, I think, you know, we like to send our people to different acceleration centers for short term. It makes you like a better leader. It makes you more empathetic so that you get diversity of thought. You know, everyone teases me. I can always get to someone being a famous Canadian. Like it's like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon for me. It's 7 degrees of like Canadianism. So I have my own bat, you know, thing. But I think it just broadens your horizon. And also walking into a room, not knowing anyone, which is what you generally do when you make that first step, whether it's a change in geography, it's a change in, you know, business unit that you're working in. It's brave and it's bold, but let me tell you, you become much stronger for doing it. Like that self strength is there. And I think it makes you a better career person. And I think, you know, diversity of thought matters. It really does. And I think it also makes you an incredible listener, especially if you're in a country where you don't, it's not your first tongue, which I've not done, but you have to listen better. And so I think all those things are so important to do.
That's such a great point about exposing yourself to new places and being forced to like enter a room and start making conversations, start meeting people, being uncomfortable. Yeah. And, you know, you can't walk in the room and be like a big personality necessarily. Like you do sort of have to, it humbles you a little bit.
Totally.
You're absolutely right. You have to listen.
You know, it hits a lot of the things I believe in. Be brave, be bold, be intellectually curious. Mm. Right. And then, yeah. Be comfortable being uncomfortable, because I, you know, there's days still where I'm like, I don't really think I know what's about to happen, but I got to just be okay that's what I'm doing today.
I don't want to assume anything about your experience, but I wonder what it's been like as a woman in sort of a more male dominated field, especially as you were kind of coming up. Talk to me about that. Has that been a thing for you?
Look, I've been at the firm for 30 years, so I think you would imagine. So I think there's a few things I don't know if it's just, there's so many decisions you need to make in your life and your career as you go through. And I think those decisions impact you differently, right? So, you know, for me, I am married to someone who works. Right. I have three children. By the way, men have it in the firm as well. Right. It's not just the women anymore. The world has changed. But the boldness is a balance. Right. When you're going up through the firm, and when I went up through the firm to make sure my voice got heard when it was important to be heard. And, you know, that there is a bit of trailblazing that happens. And the first person who does it has to do it in a way that helps the people next. Right. And I think that, I had people in front of me. I wasn't the first woman, I'm always conscious of that a little bit, but then that just because you're a woman doesn't mean the person behind you who happens to be the woman is the same as you. And I think sometimes that gets a little mixed up at times, right? Like everyone has different stories, has different things they carry on their back and have just, you know, like, so I've always been sensitive to that, but yeah, I walked into many rooms, and by the way, like, still do, where I'm the only woman in the room, right? And so I want to make sure, though, people understand I'm not there as a woman. I'm there as a very well-qualified person who happens to be a woman. And that dance is really important.
Yeah. As you were coming up in your career, did you ever find yourself overcompensating a little bit? Like you come across as a very confident person. I don't know if you always have come across that way.
Yeah. I think there's a lot, I do try my best, but I do a lot of secret things to do it. Right. Like when I used to walk to the client was up the road from me in Manhattan, I always listen to a song before I get on stage. I listen to a song, like, you know, and I said it to someone the other day, it was a very good friend of mine. I was like, just look at yourself in the mirror. Like, you got yourself here. You deserve to be here. You're strong. You know, there are all those weird things people talk about, like the power pose that I'm not as keen on, but just like, you got to go in knowing, like, you're good. You got it. And by
you
the
have
way,
to pump yourself up.
Yeah. And I think men do it too, by the way. Like, I think we just talk about it a bit more. But I also, the overcompensation, I will tell you here, is where it comes from, is the technical knowledge. Do you know what I mean? So especially if you think about my career all the way through, you know, I had a history degree. So like I overcompensated to technical accounting. I moved from, you know, asset management to banking. I overcompensated on understanding banking. Like, and to me, everyone should do that in gender neutral, right? Like the overcompensation is to the actual expertise you need to be in the room. And then it's easy to be confident because you're answering questions that you know because you compensated and you learned it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And it makes me think of what you said about, you know, being a CPA, like that no one can take it from you.
Totally. You earned it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Tell me a little bit about the candid career conversations and how that came about.
Yeah. And you know who the first one was with was my mom.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah. How and sweet. It's funny, Ryan, I'm in Ottawa. So I think the candid career conversation started, and it was with my mom. My mom still works. She's done a lot in that space. Was around people wanting to just hear more from other people about choices they've made, how they've decided to do different things, how like that evolution of work and life together. And so we thought as a team, it was important to get some of those messages out through guests who could do it through like just quick chats on how they were doing, letting people ask the questions. And so it was a space where more people can sort of hear from other people about careers. And it's honest. Like, I'm a big believer in, like, I think sometimes people forget, like, every single person I spoke to or I still speak to have had those moments where, like, oh gosh, I don't think I can do it. Oh gosh, like, did I make a big mistake I can't come back from? Oh gosh, how do I look forward? And I think that's really important for people to understand that that happens in all different points in your careers.
And make me think of, a conversation that I had with Wes Bricker, where he was talking about having imposter syndrome. I was like, well, this is mind blowing, you know?
Yeah.
Do you notice when you're doing those conversations? So you said correct me if I'm wrong. You said that their audience can participate in them.
They can ask questions. Yeah.
So do you notice some of the same questions coming up from people? What are they? If you could
very thematic. Like, I think some of it is career advice. Like, people want honest career advice and they don't know how to get it. Right. And I think that goes to the brave, bold. And there's two parts of that. If you're going to ask for it, which you should, you also have to be willing to accept it. Right. Like, develop, I will tell you, developmental feedback, constructive feedback, and people talk about it all the time. It is a gift, but it's also hard to take. And if you don't take it very well, you stop getting the gift. It's like no different than like, if you get something, you know, if your husband every week gives you something you don't like, he's going to stop giving it to you, like giving you anything.
Right.
Right. And so that's a big theme that comes up. Like, how do I get it? How do I get the advice? How do I get real advice? How do I career plan? And I will say there is a big theme, especially from the women, about how do you manage both home and life? It is. And it's, you know, and look, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life choices, because you make choices all the way through and you never stop. But that is a big one, right? Like, how do you do that? And then how do you make sure people, you want them to know you have this balance, but you don't want to be left out, right? Not asked things. So that one is another big theme. And hybrid, I mean, hybrid and virtual, and how you manage your life in that, it has been over and over again a big theme.
Interesting.
Yeah.
In that same vein, I want to talk to you about mentorship, because I know it's really important to you. Talk to me about the importance of mentorship in your own life.
Yeah. So I'm going to do mentorship and advocacy, because I think people get them mixed up and they are very different.
Yeah.
So I have been absolutely blessed throughout my career to have incredible both mentors and advocates. Earlier on, the mentor around, you know, how do I do this? What do I do? Like the day-to-day type stuff, right? Like somewhere safe, especially with my background, when I really, for the first few years, I had no idea what I was doing, right? A safe space to have someone I could talk to and feel comfortable and push me, right? All the way through. It started to change a little bit as I probably became a partner more than anything, to advocacy from different people. Because sometimes your mentor, you spend so much time with, and a lot of times they're the ones you spend time with and you also work for, like, you know, a lot. And so you always have to make sure that sometimes you're too, like where you both decide you want to be may not match, because they have implications to each of you differently. I think for advocacy, you know, I had people who pushed me to do things that I wasn't 100% sure I could do or wanted to do or knew I could do, who then had my back when I did it. Because that's a very, like when you take that jump and then you don't have someone who has your back, it's hard, right? And so I had at different points in my career, people who really had my back and were advocates and pushed me. And I also always was very strong in making sure that they treated me the same way they would advocate or mentor a man. Like, I always honestly try to separate the two. And I think it's hard, you know, like even the other day I said to someone, like, I'm very blessed. My father is alive and I'm married and I have a husband. Like, I don't need a father. I don't need a husband. Like, that's good. I got that stuff. My home stuff is good. It's the work stuff. And so those two things, and then in all fairness, like sometimes for the home stuff, I have a group of incredible women who I've worked with at the firm throughout my career that I use for that. So it's not one size fits all. And you can have, like, people talk about it, I think, like a board of directors. I was never that formal. I think it's like one or two advocates is important. And but again, what comes with advocacy is you need to listen. And sometimes they give you pretty hard messages. For mentors, I think the same. It's also like a lot of people ask me, how do I get a mentor? A lot of times a mentor, you actually earn it, right? By working with the person, they have your back. And so I think those are the things that I see. But it's been, to me, like, it's another PwC like special place is I've had a lot through my career. So much so that every now and again, everyone's taking, like, they'll ping me and be like, I'm ready to talk. Do you have a minute? I'm like, I'm fine. Actually, I'm good.
What about your parents? I know you're staying with them right now. And what kind of example did they set for you when you were growing up in terms of like work and drive?
They, you know, their story is pretty incredible when you think about it, moving country to country. My dad had to recertify in places. My mom, extremely supportive of my dad. Then she started her own business and he was supportive of her. I have two brothers. So it was always a big thing, you know, but at the same time, we tried to always eat dinner together. You know, so they had this sort of balance in our lives of both. And education was important to them. And I will say they definitely, I would say it, my team always lasts, like Kaminsky's don't quit. Like there's been times like I'll call, like I'll tell you, especially early in my career when I like, I always tell the story I did at, I didn't know, I was trying to get all my coursework done to be done. So I took individual and corporate tax at the same time, no one telling me that corporate tax is actually based off of individual tax. And, I mean, I was totally lost in corporate and I got my first exam back and I thought it was out of 50 and it was out of 100. So you can only imagine how bad it was. But, you know, I called home and I was upset. I lived in Toronto. My parents were in Ottawa and my mom said to me, you go talk to that professor and you sit with her. And I was like, Mom, but I listened and she did help me. So like, they've been very much part of all that with me.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
What's some advice that you come back to a lot? I think you've definitely shared some already, but what are some of the things that you find yourself saying like over and over again to the people you mentor?
When people offer, take them up on it and set, this is like, look, this is tactical, but it's really important. If they offer, take them up on it and set time with them. I've always been so surprised. Like I'll be at something and I'll say, oh, I'm happy to talk to you. 30 minutes. For a first conversation or 45 isn't that long. And then I see them again. I was like, you haven't put time with me yet. They're like, we weren't sure if you meant it. Most people mean it when they say it. Put the time. So that's like very tactical, but really important. Secondly, I think some of the things I say is like, breathe and stop being so hard on yourself. Like I don't love the saying, like it's a marathon, not a sprint. It was never one of my favorite sayings when I was growing up through the firm. But at a certain point, I'm happy people said it to me, right? Like breathe, let's focus on three things and work through those three things. And they all should link into a longer term plan. Like what has surprised me over time is how some people are really well planned out. And if they're agile, it's okay, right? They can make the change. But like I always say it, I had a North Star. I wanted to be the audit partner on a large, like our largest audit. It was important to me. And so all the things I did. So I think all those things. And then I am very, very focused on like, don't do anything unnatural with your personal life or your business life.
Tell me about that North Star. Like, how did you figure out that that was your goal?
Look, we are a client service firm. I think we don't, you know, like that is who we are as fundamentally. We serve our clients and I love doing client service my whole career. And like I had a lot, like I did a lot of work in the asset and wealth management space and then I wanted to do something different and just looking to see what I could do differently that would put me out there as like a person who can serve client, who's technical, who can lead teams, like all those things come with leading a big engagement. And so for me, as I was moving along and you talk about mentors and advocates, it's really also who you look up to in the firm. And I, you know, there were a lot of people in those seats who were really good to me, who I looked up to that I was like, gosh, I could emulate them one day. And I hope by doing that role, people would want to emulate me.
The last thing I want to talk to you about is you mentioned before work-life choices, which I really like, and I'm going to think more about that. I know that you're a fellow boy mom.
Yes.
Tell me about being a parent as you moved up in your career. And I think you mentioned that your husband, you know, also works. And so how did you kind of manage that? And I promise you, I ask this question to men as well.
No, it's a really great question. And like, so the year I made partner, got married and was pregnant with my first child. So everyone was like, congratulate. And I was like, I don't even know on what, right?
Yeah, it's a lot at once.
Yeah. And then I had the twin, I have three boys and I had three under two for a year. Yeah. So how did I manage through? Some of it is scheduling. Like I think there is a really big secret to running a really good schedule and to do that schedule, thinking about where guilt sits in your schedule. Guilt is really tough, right? And so I think for me, I'll never forget with my first, I was always trying to rush home. We lived and also making my life as easy as possible. When I was in the city, we, you know, lived in the city. So it just made it easier in so many different ways. And so trying to be realistic about what can work and what can't work, right? Trying to be realistic between my husband and I dividing responsibilities to say, like, did both of us have to be a doctor's? Can we, you know, and there's, cause there's lots of things that happen, right? Is every school thing that you go to so absolutely critical that everyone has to be at it? So I did a lot of schedule management, right? We also had the benefit that my kids were early risers, like very early. And my husband's an academic. He does not like TV. So we were up with them. So by the time I got to work, it was like I'd had a lot of time with them. There's the other part of it, which I'm sure you know, is how do you schedule some me time for yourself, but also time for you and your spouse or your partner? And so we tried to do date night, but the nanny, like the babysitter I'd have come on date night would actually be our cleaning lady. So like you get the double benefit, you know, like I tried to do a lot of those types of things and have open conversations. And then, you know, as my kids have gotten older, people used to say to me like, yeah, little kids, little problems, big kids, bigger problems. They were probably right. It's just different problems. So I have said this publicly, like for at one point in time, as I was looking to be the lead partner on one of the big clients, is the same time my husband got a job of a lifetime on the wrong coast. I say the wrong coast, like he said, like, so for 7 years, I commuted back and forth from east to west. Now it changed the way I parented, right? It was like weekends were really important. I have two phones. I don't go to games without them. Like with, I only go with my personal, not my work. And so all those things, and again, agility matters and you have to listen. It's like, this is going to come out. So I have to be extraordinarily careful. They're not your clients. They're your people. Like they are my people, the most important people, but no different than I tell people, you have to listen to your clients. You also have to listen to your people. They have voices. Do you know what I mean? And you sort of start to balance out knowing what matters and what doesn't matter. Like one of my kids, in all fairness, hates when I'm on the phone in the car.
Mm.
That's a big thing. So like if I'm driving him somewhere and it's 5:30, I'm not the right driver for him. Or right. We have a discussion to say, I'll drive you there and then I won't do the cone back. Right. But like, you got to listen and you got to feel it out. And also I don't like my kids know Peter, like they know PwC, like we don't completely separate both lives. Hmm. So they'll talk about Peter, like they're part of it. Like they're part of like my career. They're proud of me. They know when I've had ups and downs, you know, and all of that has been really important. Mm-hmm. And my husband is, I'm extraordinarily blessed. Like we balance each other out and we each help each other when we need to get help. And I think, you know, look, I was in a situation, I was a partner by then, so it helped, but I would stop doing things to be able to get extra help.
Right. Yep.
It just mattered.
The only other thing, Catherine, that we didn't get to touch on was, you know, outside of your family, what some things that you're passionate about outside of your role. You're obviously very passionate about PwC and the job you do, but what else do you love to do?
I have incredible girlfriends and we love to, we walk and we do Pilates and we have some, we do girls weekends. They're important, like to do things. And we go to concerts and we tease each other because we can never agree. We do great. I have three boys that are now 18 and 2 16-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And they are boys. So I usually do some crazy vacations where I usually get hurt and they don't, but where I have to like, be able to compete with the fact that I can be at the, I can do the, I snowboard. So they, and I used to be better than them. They're getting close now, or I can do the canyoning and, you know, mm-hmm. so all those things, pretty much like I'm pretty open to anything. The thing my husband always laughs at me, he probably is right. I am extroverted, but I'm introverted a little. Like he's more like, he'll want to go to the neighbors and like meet neighbors. I'm like, I don't need any new friends. Like,
yeah, I feel that.
Yeah. So those are the things that we do, to get anything we can do together, anything I can do on my part. And I do like me time. I like it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a big fan of a manicure pedicure. I can promise you that.
Mm-hmm. I think, Catherine, you gave really some wonderful advice and very healthy perspective. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with me. I learned a lot. For me, I think one of the biggest takeaways is your authenticity. I imagine people are very, you know, attracted to you for that reason. And I'm sure you're a wonderful mentor.
Thank you. And thanks for doing this. It's important.
Of course.
And I'm going to end where I began. There's nothing better than getting your CPA.
Thank you, Catherine. This was
fun.
Thank
you. All right. Nice to see you.